Hi, Gene. Don Schaefer here.
I don't know whether you read that massive amount of email that I sent you, but I'm a retired broadcaster and podcaster. I have a radio show and podcast, and I'm also on the final throes of my PhD dissertation. And how we talk to each other seems to be my focus. And when I had heart surgery a couple years ago, it's funny how I was just absolutely gobsmacked by how the staff treated me. It was so spectacular. And I came to the conclusion, I thought, geez, if we could put caring into our everyday conversations, imagine what would happen in the world. So along this journey, I've bumped into your work. And so I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Well, thank you. I'm honored.
So what can you tell me, or what can you tell us about patient-centered care?
Well, first of all, it's not accurate in the sense that we have focused too much on giving of self without understanding the relationship between the practitioner and the patient, that it's not just all one-way giving. It's also a mutuality and a reciprocity, and it's about the authenticity of the two coming together in a given moment. In my work, I talk about the transpersonal caring moment when the practitioner is fully present and authentic and intentional and conscious of their presence and this heart connection with that other person, even momentarily, in a brief moment. It opens up space for a deeper connection whereby the practitioner can fully listen, and it becomes a biogenic, life-giving experience for both the person, the patient, as well as the practitioner. So I've begun to critique person-centered care, although earlier on in my journey, I consciously and in my writing and my presentations, I talked about a shift from patient-centered care to person-centered care, but then began to realize that it's beyond a person, just a one-way. It's really a mutuality of both and. So I don't know if that contributes to anything that's refreshing or not, but it's part of our awakening that everything is connected. So the way in which we take care of ourselves, our own compassion and loving kindness with ourselves affects our ability to have loving kindness and compassion with the other. And that's a lifelong journey, but it's also part of the professional ethic and the covenant that nursing in particular has with humanity to sustain human care and healing and health and wholeness, and how we live that out through this caring and love, basically, and love of service and our purpose for why we even exist as a profession. But we have been so medicalized that we've kind of lost our way too, although you experienced it.
So interesting, you would say that we've lost our way. Are we finding our way?
I don't think the healthcare system is. I think nursing is seeking, behind the scenes, nursing has been searching and developing its own philosophies and theories and values and making more explicit what we have to offer to humanity for at least the last 3 or 4 decades. And it's now coming to its more mature balancing, but we still lack giving voice and language and informed action to help move from change to really deep transformation, because the system has to be transformed from the inside out. It's the old paradigm of medical science and the objectivist detached worldview that we're still trying to work our way out of. It's so dated. It's so, so limited. It's sad. It's sad for the practitioners and it's sad for the public.
I was quite struck by one of the comments that my team of doctors made, where he referred to this level of caring as just good customer service. And I did not experience good customer service. I experienced caring.
Yes.
And when you use a word like reciprocity in a conversation, that means that there's not a power dynamic, that we come to that conversation in a vulnerable and open state.
Human to human.
Yes. Yeah. So it's completely different. What led you down this path?
My disillusionment with nursing advancing under medical science without a meaningful philosophical foundation for its practice and its science. And I had studied philosophy and got my PhD and so forth. And so when I entered faculty position, I was disenchanted to see how we were trying to advance under medicine. And I was asking myself, why do we exist as a profession? We're not a subset of medicine. We had our own values and philosophy and worldview and heritage and traditions. And yet our practices have been largely invisible because they haven't been named. If you don't have your own language, you don't exist. So one of my gifts, if you will, I have given language to these 10 caritas processes, which brings a deeper meaning to caring, which brings the values, the deep philosophical, ethical commitment to humanity and the inner subjective life world of the other person, trying to stay in their frame of reference, and also giving language to the ontology or the ways of being caring. What does it mean to be caring, not just do caring, not just do medicine? So it's that kind of shift that has given voice and language to this phenomena, which now we have through my institute and my work with colleagues. We have developed like a full circle of knowledge to help advance and balance the yin and yang, medicine and nursing, caring and curing. It's not there yet, but that's the pursuit and that's the journey that we're all sharing at this time.
Can you talk about the key objectives or the key tenets?
It's to transform self and system from the inside out. A shift from medical cure science and its old paradigm of era one thinking to allowing for the wholeness of humanity, mind, body, spirit, one with the environmental field. And moving for healing, and which is an inner process. You can treat and cure all what you want to, but healing is an inner journey. And so no human being can heal with yang energy alone in that hospitality, customer, detached, scientific, objective model. It requires the depth of our soul, so to speak, and the human inner journey that we all carry with us to put us back into right relation with source. Is one definition of healing is being in right relation with source, which is universal love. So in my work, I use this deep ethic of Emmanuel Levinas, the French philosopher, who says, the ethic of belonging comes before our separate being. So the belonging becomes before the ontology, the ethic before the ontology, which is this broader worldview that we all belong to this sacred circle of life and death. We all come from it. We all return to it. And so we hold that in our wholeness and we create space in those caring moments, that are transpersonal. They go beyond just the two people in that moment. You're creating an entirely new energetic field, depending upon the consciousness of the practitioner. If the practitioner has that customer objective model, I'm just going to run and just be nice to somebody, that's not authentic, a scripting model that has been used a lot, that can actually cut off our access to our own inner journey. In contrast to just holding that space, often in silence, so that you authentically, in a sacred space, are able to listen to the other person's story and what's meaningful for them and what's emerging and the purpose that you can create that's shared journey in that moment. It's a very different paradigm. And that's what we have to wake up to. And I think that's, we're still ignorant. Ignorant in the sense that we're ignoring the most basic common tenets of our humanity and humanizing or lack of humanizing the system. We've taken the human out of the healthcare system. It's not a healthcare system anyway, it's a sick care system. So anyway, I get pretty dramatic about this.
No, but I think it speaks to a lot of systemic problems in many fields, and I wonder how, with the busyness of life, we can come into that conversation with an open heart. I'm not sure what your healthcare system is like, but ours is pretty busy, and most of the workers in the hospitals are overworked and stressed. I was impressed with how in the moment and how in their hearts the cardiac staff were for me and the people on our ward. So I'm and knowing how they were dealing with COVID at the same time. So they were at the margins. Are we asking too much of healthcare staff?
It's the structure, it's the culture. It's rare that nurses can actually practice their own profession in the existing hospital structure. It's only when you have leadership and you have opportunities to really invite the creativity and the human spirit and new models of practice, new patterns of delivery of care that can be created by nurses for the system, then you start seeing change from deep within. You're changing the consciousness and the culture of the practitioners. You're changing the structure, you're redesigning, you're repatterning the field, and that's what's necessary. And if we're in a quantum universe, which we are in, and the pandemic woke up to that, then if you change any part of the system, it's going to affect the whole field. So when nurses rise up and give voice and language to what they have to offer to balance and complement that one-sided paradigm, it can't help but affect the whole field. And so I'm working with hospitals now nationally, if not internationally, to really repattern and change the nature and the maturity of nurses in terms of owning their own practice and giving voice and language and informed moral action. And it's happening at the concrete micro level and the macro level for the leadership. So we have hospitals such as Stanford Healthcare, Cedars-Sinai, Los Angeles, Kaiser Permanente. They have this commitment to have what's referred to as a Caritas coach, which is what we prepare as part of our educational programs in my institute, to have a Caritas coach on every unit in the hospital so that you can actually change the culture and provide leadership intellectually and experientially. So if you don't have a consciousness and a theory and a perspective that you can articulate to guide your practice, you're just randomly responding to the moment. And so it's the difference between medicine does not have a core philosophy. You know, they go with just the disease and the diagnosis and the treatment. There's probably been one or two major authors to develop a philosophy of medicine. But in reality, there's not, I mean, there's a lot of medical ethics, but you don't really think about having philosophies of medicine. You don't hear about that. The reason I'm mentioning this is because the one person that was really a philosopher of medicine was Ed Pellegrino, and he was the professor at Georgetown University in the Institute of Ethics. And he really wrote a book on the philosophy of medicine. But other than that, I mean, I'd have to research it, but he was sort of like an outlier. But it's that kind of philosophical, ethical endeavor that medicine has not really engaged in the same way that nursing has. It's just an interesting contrast.
Many years ago, when I was a young disc jockey at a rock station in Montreal, the owner, who was quite eccentric, became very good friends with a Swami from India, and we had a resident guru to help guide us in a very interesting politically and musically inspirational time. And I'm curious, the idea of a care coach on a ward kind of symbolizes that for me. Can you talk about what their role would be and how they would work with a team?
Well, they are experts in human caring and healing and health, and they have both intellectually and experientially the knowledge of these 10 Caritas processes, which are universals of human caring that I've developed in my writing and all in my work for 40 years. And these are now considered universals, and they've been able to go through the journey themselves. So as part of the educational program for the Caritas coaches, they go through these Caritas processes for themselves first, So then they have the depth of their own consciousness and their own evolution to another awareness of the importance of themselves and how they are in the moment, their authentic presence, the authentic listening, the use of silence, the use of touch, the ways in which you create a healing environment through your very presence, your ways of being. And so these 10 Kirtas processes, which you can find on my website or in any of my writings, are really sort of the guide. And if you are living out these 10 Kirtas processes as a gestalt, as a consciousness, as a way of understanding, a Kirtas consciousness brings caring and love and the deeper ethic of their purpose and their reason for being there. And, you know, this one quote I have in one of my videos was, it says something like, maybe this one moment with this one person is the reason you're here on earth at this time. If you have that in your consciousness when you enter that space with another person, woo, you would stop and pay attention. So it's that kind of conscious evolution of attending to that, along with the skills and the knowledge and all the technology. But technology, doing the finest of that, can actually be unethical, depending on how we are engaged with the human dimensions of our practice. So the Kirtas coach then is there as a mentor, as a guide, as a model, but helping the person to model their best self and to have the language. And so what they do as a starting point is they start sharing their caring moments instead of complaining about all the difficulties and all the negativity and the system problems, which are there. They shift their focus to those caring moments that they had with patients. And then they start finding evidence of their own Kirtas processes. And then they realize, I'm already practicing this theory, I just didn't know it. So it moves it from the margin to the centerpiece where they can articulate it and stand in place and then develop new patterns of delivery of care from that place, from that ground of being, from that confidence. And that's where you have the leaders and the grassroots nurses coming together to actually transform and start experimenting with new patterns of delivery of care. And we've done projects where we started introducing these as pilots or as experimental projects or demonstration units. And in one of our earlier projects, there was something like a 36% turnover rate of the nurses because they were feeling abused and overworked, et cetera. We introduced this practice model for themselves and their way of seeing the patients and their practices. And within 2 years, the turnover rate was 16%. And then it dropped down to 6% in the year three. So it's like nurses are hungry to be able to practice why they're here, why they exist. And that's what systems have to learn, to create new structures where nurses can practice nursing and caring and healing.
Can you talk about the impact that being in those positions has on nurses?
It's devastating. It's heartbreaking because they can't provide the compassion and care when the system has shut their hearts down. So caring resides in our heart. Compassion is in our heart. Caring is in our heart. Love is in our heart. Our beauty, our truth, the very source of sustaining our humanity is in our heart. It's not in our head. So when you shut your heart down, you just robotically have to go back and do the job. And then you suffer later. But even if you're giving the caring, you're still at a sacrifice to your own heart. So at a symbolic, metaphorical level, the burnout in nursing is a spiritual crisis. It's a heartbreak. And the system is not awake to understand the human dynamics of what's happening in culture. They're only about the economics or the efficiency or the technology or the robotic industrial product line, assembly line to deliver services. And nurses get caught up in that. And unless you have another consciousness, unless you have a theory, unless you have support to actually critique that, if you don't have a philosophy and a value and a theory, you just conform. And then you shut your heart down and nurses suffer. But if you can create the culture, and it sounds like you had a mini culture within the heart culture, that heart team that had a commitment to the heart at another level, not just as an organ, but at the beauty of the heart, the sacredness of the heart, which supported you in contrast to what you experienced from the physician, which is interesting. It's like a yin-yang contrast that has to be rebalanced.
How do we bring more of your model to everyday conversations to change hearts and minds, to change the conversations that we're having?
Through education, educating physicians, educating nurses, educating leaders. You can't use knowledge you don't have. And most cultures, most academic and hospital cultures, unless they have been through some transformation to understand what's needed at the basic culture level, then you can't do something. It's a consciousness shift. A futurist whom I used to work with, who's no longer living, his name was Lee Kaiser. He said, in this sense, he said the nurse, but I would say the practitioner of the future will only be hired because of their consciousness of caring. They had to have a different consciousness and of caring and healing to come into the field, not just to be this technician of treatment and cure at all cost. So it's a whole cultural shift of wholeness, whole person, whole system, whole culture change, whole consciousness change. And it's a different paradigm of science. So my work, I've written about caring science as sacred science. It's sacred because we're dealing with the soul and the life force and the energy of another human being. And we never know how we're touching the life of another person. And when we touch the life of another, we're also being touched. So how does that affect us? And what do we do with that? How do we deepen our compassion? How do we deepen our heart connection versus shutting it down? And that gives more depth and beauty to the practitioners. We become a bodhisattva, so to speak. We're a blessing to ourselves and each other once we have this understanding. It's rare.
Yeah. Well, I'm late to come to your work, but I have lots of reading and catch up to do.
Well, I wish you all the best with your experiences, both personally, and I'm glad you had your own healing journey, yeah, your own caring journey. And I wish you all the best with your PhD and really making new sense out of this.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time and learning more about your work. And I will probably circle back.
Okay. Well, let me hear how it goes and if I can answer any more questions. And God bless. And thank you.
Thank you, Jean.
You're quite welcome.
Okay. Bye-bye.